Hey good people, it's me. Gonna tell you something real quick before we start the episode off. If you want to hear more podcasts, you can go to coastalnoise.com. You can go to the podcast section and bam, there it is. Right before your eyes. Anything you want, it's there. Go get it. You can listen streaming on a smartphone, or if you'd like, you can download the file and put it on your computer. To do that, you just click on the file and it'll bring you to a different page where you're going to right click and you can save the file as, and then just put it on your laptop somewhere. That way you can throw it on an MP3 player, listen to it on the go. There is also a community page where you can join in the conversation with us. Let us know what you think of the show, how we're doing, if you want to talk about a topic, if you want to talk to us directly, all that good stuff. There's also a comment section on the homepage that you can leave us feedback on. You can also contact the email address, coastalnoise@yahoo.com. Or if none of that satisfies you, go to Facebook, go to Twitter, follow Coastal Noise on either, or follow me or any of the other folks that come on the show. And that is a great way to follow around, keep track of what we're doing, stay up to date with the updates, and just to kind of support us if you like the thing that we're doing here. So that being said, let's go ahead and get to the episode. We've got a great one today. Josh Scrimeti, that's Josh Scrimeti, not John Scrimeti, who was on our last episode, comes in and talks a little bit about his worldly travels. He's just recently come back from California doing a summer camp and ski resort stuff, and he is about to leave us to go to Australia, and we hope to have him back again soon to hear more about those details. So, enjoy the episode with Josh Scrimeti, Daniel Cavanaugh, and myself. Enjoy. Hey, what's up, everybody?
Just chilling. How's everybody else?
I wish they could tell us. Be nice. Oh, hey, I wanted to show you something real quick, too, before. I saw these in Best Buy the other day. I was thinking this would be... Ooh, I hope I... Oh, there they are. Look at those. Those are wireless headphones. They have interchanging glowing things right there. And they have computer chips in them. Apparently, that's like the new thing for high-grade headphones. It also has a little, can you see there? It's like a little slot that pulls out for a microphone that you can speak into.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
And the fact that they're wireless, like we could get up and leave to go to the bathroom and stay in the conversation and then pull out the little thing. Like if you just really wanted to say something, you're away from your mic, just pull it out and be like, yeah, I agree, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And how much were those?
They're like $100.
Okay.
So for three or four of them could be a hefty investment.
Yeah. Or the fine people at Afterglow could send us a pair for free.
Yeah, heck yeah. I mean, those kind of pictures would look so boss.
I like
all sync up to blue, you know, all have one color going. It's
like blue, ready to roll.
All right, before I forget.
I do like the how they can change colors. That's pretty cool. All right. So the chip in there, is that for, that's not in the Afterglow headphones, is that like a sound thing or?
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm sure it ups the quality of the sound that it outputs.
So. I'll do some research. I've got to go to Best Buy Thursday. So
it probably has something to do with the Wi-Fi capability too, or the wireless. I mean, not Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi would be cool though. Yeah, I don't know what you could do with Wi-Fi and headsets. I guess you could maybe like download audio podcasts or listen to streaming radio or something like that.
Yeah.
Take these ideas. What's her name? I forgot.
Afterglow.
Thank you. You know better than I do.
That's our new sponsors.
Afterglow. Yeah, we'll give you ideas and y'all can give us some headsets. Be a beautiful partnership.
People helping people.
When you go to Best Buy, though, you need to look at these. In the same aisle, there is these blue headphones. I don't know if they're... I think they're Logitech. They're the best sounding headphones I've ever heard. And they're gaming headphones. And you put them on, and they play Borderland 3 audio, and it sounds incredible. And it's just a bunch of clips of like gun shooting and people screaming and monsters and flames, and you can hear the surround going across, you know, from left and right. Mm-hmm. It sounds incredible.
Does that have like the Xbox Live microphone too? Is it that?
Yeah, it's got a mic on it too.
They're like $60, right? I think I saw
those. Yeah, 70 I think is what this one was.
Okay, yeah, I invested in a headset. So, but I bought the like $20 one. But I looked at it.
See, what I'm worried about for wireless stuff is, like, I don't know if I could get it to run through a mixer, though. That would be the only thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially multiple ones.
I don't know how that would work.
I do not either. But it'd be cool to be a cool possibility if we could get it to happen.
In the future, I'm sure it will.
We'll get their attention. We'll find a way.
When you're at Best Buy's, tell me if they have a Blu-ray of Ghostbusters, because I need to get one. I only have a VHS, so it's kind of...
You only have...
Of Ghostbusters.
Oh, okay. Like I was about to say...
I was like, if you only have a VHS...
You're not getting wireless headphones.
No way, that's how Blu-rays play, right? VHS player?
I'm not a zoologist, but I think that's how that works.
I don't know either.
So I wanted to give a quick shout-out to Chris Guillebeau. I was telling y'all about his book earlier that I had read. It's called The Art of Nonconformity, and he just kind of talks about being your own boss, basically, you know, trying to set up investment plans that work for you in the long term without you having to sacrifice to the regular day in grind, being a cog in the machine kind of thing.
Right.
And he might be 35 now, but his big life goal that he writes about was visiting every country before he turned 35, because he used to live in the city and then eventually quit his job. He started importing coffee beans from Jamaica and then reselling them to connoisseurs in America, and he had this online business running. So he talks about a lot about how you can use the internet to just establish your own brand and all this kind of stuff. And he has, you know, he's a speaker. He's a regular writer for CNN.com and I think the Huffington Post. And
that is a good one.
Yeah. And he's also got the books he writes, and he's got his own blog that's pretty popular. He's just a pretty interesting guy. He kind of reminds me of a Tim Ferriss kind of guy who published the 4-Hour Work Week and has other books like The 4-Hour Chef and The 4-Hour Body. I read his book and I really liked it. I kind of like those, I guess you could call them self-help books, mm-hmm. that just kind of help you think differently. So after I finished his book, I said, I need to see if he's got a Twitter account so I can follow him. And you know, so I found him, and he's got one, and I followed him, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to tweet him. What the heck? He's got over 100,000 followers, but you know what? I liked his book, so I tweeted him. I was like, hey, man, I just read your book. It was great, a really bold and inspiring read. Keep up the good work. He tweeted me back in like an hour. He's like, thanks, man. Good luck with everything you're doing. So I was like, dang, you know? And apparently, that's just part of his self-motivating his own motivation that he has for himself is part of his daily ritual is to, you know, get up at a certain amount, at a certain hour, and respond to like hundreds of emails that he gets, you know. And he says, yes, it's a chore, and yes, it's hard to do, but that's kind of the life that I've set up for myself, to where if I want this small army, he calls it, to, you know, support me and for me to have the motivation to give back to this community, that I have to respond, just like a professor at a college, you know, has emails that he has to respond to, or an administration figure in most businesses, but he's doing it on his own terms, basically. So now I'm reading his book, The $100 Startup, Reinvent the Way You Make a Living, Do What You Live, and Create a Near Future. So he's basically kind of a vagabond or kind of thing, you know. Yeah. He just kind of promotes putting your money and your time into a new spectrum of thinking, you know. Is your time is worth as much as your money, or vice versa, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, how can you get away from material things to have more valuable experiences in terms of social communications and traveling and all this kind of stuff. And he teaches you how to, like Tim Ferriss does, how to travel on a dime and be frugal and, you know, stay in hostels and plan a smart plan between, you know, if you're going to this country, then maybe you can make a stop in this country and all this kind of stuff. So it was just a really interesting read, and I really like books like that.
Yeah, like when you said he emails everyone back to kind of keep his small armor together or keep him motivated. It's kind of like you get what you give. Mm-hmm. And so he's still doing it and kind of like leading by example since he's already made it, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like once you get that momentum going, if you really believe in something, if you really want to create something, I think that strikes people as inspirational to a certain degree, and they want to support that kind of stuff back. Because, I mean, stuff like blog sites or podcasts, they don't really require you to necessarily pay into them. Or, you know, it's usually free media for the most part. So people just have to follow you. But tons of people, you know, with the age of the internet are still showing that that's a very possible a possible route to go. Mm-hmm. You know,
people hardest part's getting started. That's usually the hardest part, just starting, get your foot in the door, just get rolling. That's once you get past that, you usually can make it and keep going.
And fighting off resistance as well. I recently read another great book called The War of Art by Stephen. I'm looking up his name. I think it's like Stephen Partsfield or something like that.
It'd be funny if it was by Sun.
War of
Sun Tzu.
I really want to give this guy credit. So.
Right. Art of War. Backwards.
I got that.
Of course, my internet's down, but...
Let me check.
Let's see. But anyway, I guess I'm going to disconnect and reconnect. Sorry, people. Just
the
give
War
us
of Art.
The War of Art, yeah. But anyway, the book is all about beating resistance, and I really love the way this book is set up. And actually, Daniel, if you want to borrow it, I was thinking that Stephen Pressfield, yeah. You might really like it now that I've read it, I kind of read it for music, basically, and playing guitar. But you might dig it for comedy or something like that because, you know, he just talks about... It's kind of broke up in little, like one or two pages of a certain category, where it's like dealing with other people who are negative towards your creativity, or establishing routines, you know, that kind of thing. He just addresses a lot of like bullet points and then writes like a page or two about it, and then it just moves through like that. So it's all these short passages, but they're all really well constructed, and it's just something that you can pretty much flip to after you've read through it. You can flip to any page after, you know, you go back and pick it up and just read something, kind of like I do that with the Dhammapada, and you can just open like certain books that you can just open and kind of read, like toilet books, you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
then just little parts.
Yeah, you just have it on the back of your toilet and you pick it up and you flip through or whatever. So but that's a really good book. And there was a passage from The Art of Nonconformity that really caught my attention that I ended up researching because of what it was about. Have you ever heard of a guy named Ernest Shackleton?
No, I have not.
He was born in Ireland. 1874 was his birth date. Died in 1922. He was a polar explorer who led three British expeditions to the Antarctica during the time known as the Heroic Age of the Antarctic Exploration. Do you ever know that age existed?
I assume people went there, but I didn't know there was an age of...
It was right before the Third Age of Middle Earth.
And they found that Transformer.
Witwicky, I think was his name.
He started out his first voyage. He went on a failed voyage, actually, as a third officer of Robert Falcon Scott's Discovery Expedition. And he had to leave because of health-related reasons or something like that. So it was kind of a hurt, an owie on his ego, I guess is the technical term.
Motivation.
He should be
fuel for the fire.
Most failed voyages during that area, you would die. So he should be proud that he didn't die.
Dude, wait, just wait until you hear his story.
We'll get to that part.
You're gonna be blown away after you just made that statement. So basically after that failure, he vowed to return to the Antarctica to redeem his honor. So he goes out there, he gets his own voyage going, and he led one of the deepest voyages into the southern regions, and ended up getting knighted by King Edward the 12th. So
one of my favorite Edwards.
Exactly. Does anybody really, I guess historians would know, but does anybody know like all the details of that one or
maybe a couple
of each
people.
Individual?
It's kind of like King Louis in France. There's
I don't know.
18 or 20. I've lost count.
My one of our family friends read this book. I think it was on one of the Henrys, Henry the 53rd or you know, one of those. But it was one king who had like 12 wives and none of them would get pregnant with his child because he was trying to, you know, raise a kid so he could have someone to have an heir to the throne. And none of his wives would conceive. So he would just execute one and then get a new one.
Oh, yeah. King Henry, there was like the 4th or 5th.
Yeah.
And he was like a good looking guy at first and then he got older and older and he kept trying and it just wasn't working.
Well, he was sterile.
Yeah.
Was the thing. So, and I don't know if, I don't know if he ever realized that. Or if he went to his grave just
thinking he
I'm sure he didn't.
Was.
He's a king. He thinks he's perfect.
He thinks his balls are gold. But we'll check with some historians to find out which Henry that was.
Yeah. But I just thought that was crazy. But anywho, Shackleton, he gets knighted. And so he decides to go on his next voyage. And he was pretty famous for not having outside help in getting funding for his trips or like relying on the government. He was very self-motivated. He just made it happen. So this was the example that came from Chris's book and really caught my attention, which led me to research the whole story. Shackleton put out a poster, a want ad, if you will, around his town and to recruit people for his next voyage. I believe it's for this voyage, his second voyage. It says, "Men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return is doubtful, honor and recognition in case of success." More than 5,000 men applied for the job.
Goodness.
Yeah. So, and that just kind of goes hand in hand with what Chris's book is about, saying, you know, a lot of people, they just want excitement. They want something that
fulfilling.
Seems bigger than life,
mm-hmm.
even when you're little pays may be in it, because that's what his whole book, and he's, you know, saying, you can only make so much money and still keep a positive correlation between happiness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can make 70,000, like you can make 40,000, you'll be happy. You'll do okay. Right. You make 70,000, you'll be a little bit happier. But after that, you know, once you start getting past that, your happiness isn't going to go up that much, you mm-hmm. know? And that's kind of the point that Chris tries to make is
it's like the law of diminishing returns.
Exactly. So, a lot of people turn out to kind of, you know, be a part of this. Can you tap that light like twice? You just got to tap it. Gracias. So anyway, his next voyage, he sets out with a crew of 28 men and 68 huskies.
I would love to see how he picked the 28.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. That's a pretty small crew too. You know, I would think that if you're going out
from England to the Antarctica.
Yeah, I would think that you would want a pretty big crew, but at the same time maybe you would want a small crew to have more reliable people and mm-hmm. your rations,
yeah, food and stuff.
Yeah that's true.
We'll have to ask him when we meet him.
Exactly,
we have him on the show.
So he gets his crew of 28 men, he's got 68 huskies, and their goal is to cross the 2,000 miles of Antarctica continent. Their ship called the Endurance gets trapped for 11 months on an by ice, and they've got all these famous pictures of them out on the ice throwing footballs, and you can see their ship in the like miles away just sitting there like a wreck.
Do we
voyage.
Know what year he went?
I could find out. Let me see.
Drop the name on real quick, we'll look it up.
Yeah, if you don't mind. So anyway, they're trapped for 11 months in the
what was his name?
Ernest Shackleton. Yeah. Ernest Shackleton. And you could probably just type the dates of Ernest Shackleton's voyage.
Yeah, I mean, he was alive 1874 to 1922, so I'm assuming 1900 around there.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Let me backtrack real quick. See if I have a date.
Most adventuring took place early 1900s.
So his crew gets trapped in the Weddell Sea, and eventually the ice squashes his ship, and their ship sinks.
That's a problem.
Yeah, big problem. So then they spent 5 months floating on a giant iceberg.
What?
Yeah. Eventually, through great fortune, they land on Elephant Island, where they sustained on penguins and seals. They salvaged small boats from their ship, the Endurance, and so using one of these 20-foot boats from the sunken ship, Shackleton and five others made an 800-mile voyage across one of the world's roughest seas to the island of South Georgia to get help. All of his crew, including the people that he returned for on Elephant Island, survived.
That's pretty crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about the Huskies?
Probably ate the Huskies.
They definitely ate the Huskies.
First, before they even left the ship to go look for seals, they ate the Huskies.
They probably used the fur. I mean, like...
I think on the previous voyage, the first voyage, they brought like ponies with them for some reason. I remember them saying that they ate the ponies.
They definitely ate the ponies. Ponies did not survive.
You can't even ride ponies unless you're a child.
Well, I don't know.
Even in regular land, it doesn't even have to be Ice World. You can't ride ponies.
Well, I guess their thinking was that they were going to ride on the landforms because, I mean, you look at these pictures. They're out there just throwing footballs around on this thing. So I'm sure they thought that they were going to get to like some pretty large landforms and they were going to just run around exploring. But I'm sure after like 30 minutes of riding around the horse, they'd be like, hey, guys. I think we can conclude there's not shit here. Let's go back to the fire.
What if he was just insane and he's like, no, we'll find native people and we need ponies to trade. Like, what is he talking about? I don't know if I should have signed up for this.
And then they find him and they're like, you're Indians.
This was not in the poster.
Oh, man. But that's... Could you deal with it if you got out there and you were out there for like month 9... And you're just out there throwing the pigskin around. And you're thinking, you know what? I'm thinking about eating this pigskin. I mean,
I'm thinking about eating this guy who sleeps next to me. I go to work for 4 hours, and if I'm hungry, I think about eating my coworker. So,
and not even in a sexual way.
Not even close.
I don't think I could do that. Maybe if it's like an expedition to Africa, because I'm not one for the cold.
Not the cold either. I moved to a ski resort for 4 months, and that was enough for me. I couldn't do 11 months.
So tell us a little bit, because you just came back from... How long did you stay in California? You were working...
There from December 26th to April 10th. Went back out there about May 10th and returned September 1st, probably, or August 31st, somewhere around there. So went to Kirkwood, the ski resort. If you're going to go skiing, you're going to spend the money to go out there and stay at the hotel, go to Colorado. But nice slopes and whatnot, but I think Colorado's better, more consistent snowfall, nicer people.
I've skied in Utah.
Utah's also great. Yeah. I've heard a lot of good things about that.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, one thing I did notice about California is it's kind of like Mississippi in the part that the northern part is agriculture and the southern part's more developed in a sense. They don't like each other.
Really?
They're trying to split up. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Trying to seed.
Yeah. We talked about that on the last podcast. There's this one, I can't remember, was it like Golden something or?
Yeah, something like that. I
don't remember.
Probably want to make like the Golden State or something like that.
I don't know. We were talking about it and how it just seems so, like can a country really, or not even a country, just a small little town, I mean, to secede from our government. Like, where are you going to get money if you're not going to get federal funding and all this stuff? Like, how are you going to...
It could, but then think about what's going to stop people from just walking to that town and just doing whatever they want.
Yeah.
They'd have to have a police force, and then...
You got police.
Yeah, they'll Andy Griffin it, you know?
Yeah, but if a large enough group's going to be like, well, no one's backing them up, and we can do whatever we want here.
Yeah.
I don't think people are, like... I don't...
Have you been to Northern
People
California?
Aren't just going to go in there and be like, oh, we can do what they want. Or what we want, because they can't stop us. We could do that.
Have you been to Mardi Gras?
We could go to that gas station down the street and just beat the shit out of them and steal everything because they can't stop us.
No, they can't.
No, the cops can stop us.
Yeah.
Later.
But they have security cameras. We'll get caught.
No, no.
I'm saying, what's going to stop you? Like, they can have cameras or the cops, but if you leave the town, does this town, if it secedes, have the international recognition to, like, America, we need to expedite these criminals? And like, no, you're not. You're a town and you left us. We don't respect you anymore.
I think America would expedite those criminals.
We'll see.
It's not going to happen.
What was your favorite part about California?
Oddly enough, it's all the people who came to California for the idea of California. Like, there are people from all over the world and kind of coming together, and with the Californians that were from around there. But it was more the summer camp in the Sierras on Huntington Lake. Just people talking about things, and the weather was awesome. I mean, it's the summer, you're in the mountains, and it's kind of dry since you're in the mountains, but the high was like 80, but there's no humidity, and then the lows could get down to the 30s, but that's like at night, so you just bundle up when you sleep. But great outdoors weather. You could be on the lake, you can go hiking, do all these things.
Did you go to Disneyland?
I did not. I haven't been there
yet.
Have
you never been there?
Okay. No. If I go back next summer, you know, who sees? Who knows? We might make a little trip down. But I've had my fill of Disney. So.
It's different when you don't work there.
That is true. When you don't know how people die.
No, that's more fun.
Yeah, you think that unless you're one of the people who could die.
In the Haunted Mansion. That's where 100% of the deaths happen.
I do. 72. But you're close. But, I definitely liked all the people coming together and just definitely more out there. It's more liberal, obviously. And like, all you have to do is watch the news once and you see that. Mm-hmm. But it's more people can talk, I feel like, out there. At least at the camp, ideas were exchanged. It wasn't an issue. You could just talk to people, and that was nice. And then your dreams are encouraged. If you say, I want
to... It's kind of weird. Does that kind of feel weird to say, you know? What? That, like, shouldn't that be the attitude for, like...
It should be, but yeah. It's not. I think about if, at least like in Mississippi, in high school, at JD, at State, Ole Miss, Southern, I've talked to people from all these places, and you say what you want to do, and people won't necessarily come out and say don't or you're not going to, but it's not encouraged, which sometimes can be just as bad as being negative about it, because sometimes people are looking for that extra push.
I've had people tell me my dreams are stupid.
Yeah, that's just your father.
It was strangers, but whatever.
Yeah, we'll find them and we'll kill them. But, yeah, that's the way it should be. But at the camp, when people say, I want to go move here for a year, like, I want to go move to Melbourne, they say, cool, like, that's weird, because, like, I'm moving down there. Like, why don't we live together? We actually set a date. We booked our flights. We're going.
Yeah.
While you're in Mississippi and... Let's just use like a spring break or a summer trip, for example, with like my friends when I was at State. Every year we talked about it. Every year it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. We're just a bunch of dreamers, not doers here in Mississippi.
Not you guys, but the other guys at State. Love them, but nothing ever came of it.
Yeah.
A lot of talking, a lot of, oh, well, we'll do that later. How long am I supposed to wait before I start doing things I want to with my life?
Right.
Didn't you have to wait 18 years before you could start deciding?
I think retirement when you're 70.
Yeah. I want to do it while I can still run.
Yeah, exactly.
And look good shirtless.
Nice. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I plan to look good shirtless when I'm 70.
Get to work.
I think that's like a big issue with our views of retirement. We need to rework retirement, especially now all this talk about how our age is never going to see Social Security.
Right.
And all this kind of stuff.
I plan to have enough for myself and not even count Social Security.
Yeah.
Because I'm just assuming it won't be there.
Yeah. Well, now that I've started reading these books, I kind of want to start investigating, you know, your your own, make your own self-retirement plan or whatever. I'm mm-hmm. still not even sure exactly what I should be researching for, but I want to figure out how to do it.
Right. If you're starting now, 23... Uh-huh. You're ahead of most people.
Cause yeah. Well, most people just get it. Look for a job and that has a plan. That's already built in.
A lot of people think I'll just put it into my savings account, and they have no idea you're supposed to put it like different investments. Your portfolio needs to be like a wide variety of different things, so you're not dependent on one stock, aka right. Enron or something like that. And then you know, get municipal CDs and things like that. But mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know that. And this is another subject, and this actually came from ESPN, Colin Cowherd. He said, instead of teaching kids in high school trigonometry and calculus, which 98% of us won't use, they should teach us like budgeting, a small little bit of accounting about retirement, 401ks, things like that. You don't have to go too deep, but every kid should have an understanding of that. So even if you finish in high school or you don't finish high school, you at least understand what you have to do to retire instead of becoming 65 and thinking, I'm done working, and you have $6,000 in the bank to last you the rest of your life, and then you're either on the system or you're on your kids, or you die alone.
Yeah. And what's ESPN? What is that?
Sports?
Sports thing? Never, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, it's a small organization, I guess you'd say, like one channel, couple shows.
It's like an internet thing, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Never heard of it.
We'll make a T-shirt.
You may consider stocking them, maybe.
Yeah. If you're ballsy. Buy yeah. But I think that's a great idea because people don't know about it. And while trigonometry and calculus are useful subjects, if you're going to use them, I took it, and I don't see any point in my life where I'm going to need to do that. You too? Do you guys need that?
No, dude. Unless you're like building buildings.
Right. Yeah.
Building constructions.
Unless you're designing things or like figuring that stuff out, you don't need to.
Right.
I'm not saying it's not important if you're in those fields. Obviously it is. But the vast majority of people don't need it, but yet everyone has to take it or has to try to achieve that level of math or as high as they can. And math and science are very important, but not if you're not doing it.
I think they just make everyone take it just in case you're like a genius and it's like, oh, that's easy. That clicks.
Yeah.
A little Goodwill hunting.
Like 0.01% of people.
I go to a school, I work as a janitor, and I'm smarter than half the people there.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like my life.
Sounds like you're describing Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah. It's weird because, I mean, I guess they do that not only just in case maybe it'll click, but also they want you to have enough knowledge just in case
you're ever in a need for it.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, I feel kind of bad, or not bad, I feel harsh. I get harsh on myself when I think about back in the day when I thought to myself, oh, this particular subject is not useful to me, I'm not going to use it, so I didn't.
You slacked off.
Yeah, slacked off a little bit, because the internet was coming about and computers were coming about, I'm like, there's a formula, there's an app, there's something.
There's a cheat sheet in my calculator.
Yeah, technology is going to be able to do a lot of things for us so that we can focus our human resources and our mental capacities towards other things, which I think is a great idea if we want to get to like the Greek and Roman level of just where we have a surplus and we're a super advanced civilization.
At the same time, though, be careful because I feel like we're moving towards there.
Well, that's...
And we get the surplus, and we all kind of stop or slack off.
Yeah.
And then we have a nanny state. Oh, shit, what has happened?
Yeah, well, that's why I was saying I feel kind of bad about about thinking that way, because you never know. Like, that approach could make us lazy if we're relying on technology that much.
Depending on other people, technology.
Yeah, yeah. So, and also just for the fact that taking that approach could make us collectively stupider.
Right.
You know, we could have...
If you're not advancing, you're usually digressing.
Yeah.
Is that the right word?
Yeah. And if you're not at least teaching yourself a few crucial things in a broad range of subjects, then who knows how that affects your mental development for your brain, you know? What if that affects the way you learn anything, even the things that you love that you want to spend time... What if you're still slow on that because you didn't branch out enough as a kid? Does that make sense?
Right. I think that definitely carried it over, and it wasn't until my senior year at State that, Mississippi State, by the way, all our listeners, in case you're not from Mississippi, I realized my senior year, I didn't realize this till later, my senior year of high school, that I just kind of had stopped. I was like, well, I'm going to graduate. I've got all my classes set up, or I know someone in there that'll give me the homework. Mm-hmm. I can wing it enough that I'll get a B, maybe a C if I don't do anything. Doesn't really matter. I'm going to graduate. I got my scholarships where I'm going to go. And kind of just slacked off, and I was like, I'll pick it up next year in the fall. Well, the fall came. That didn't happen. Did I expect May, June, and July, half of August when I wasn't going to school, that I suddenly was going to be like, time to grind? No, I played basketball, and that was the most physical activity I did. Gained weight, got to JD. That doesn't push you. It's a junior college, and same situation. I could get A's if I tried, B's if I sort of tried, and then C's, I mean, I'm pretty sure I got those just because I had a pulse. So that happened for 2 years. Then I get to Mississippi State, and they punched me in the mouth, and I didn't know how to adjust, and I didn't know. I'd stopped growing for 3 years, stopped working, stopped pushing myself. And once you get started with that, it's kind of like anything else. Like, getting started is the hardest part, but once you start, whether it's a positive or negative habit, it just starts rolling from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. You know, I think just sitting around not doing anything, that can definitely get you in a rut. And I think also that goes back to what we were talking about, getting into jobs,
mm-hmm.
that people just get jobs just because they need that retirement plan or they need some sorts of income. And then it becomes a career move that they just kind of get plugged into.
They get sucked into.
Because they don't want to lose the benefits and all the things mm-hmm. that they've built up through working with that company.
Right.
But then once that happens, then it's kind of like you say, you know, you kind of slacked off in your studies, yep. or whatever, because you just got used to this one thing that you're going to do, and you knew you could take it easy because you had this kind of routine that you were going into.
Yeah, the goal of the degree, which was, I thought the whole point of the diploma in high school, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to get the diploma. That's the whole point of this.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't thinking I need to learn it so I can apply it later or figure out what I want to do. And so all I was worried about was the diploma instead of learning. Got my diploma, and then I went to the next one. I was like, well, if I get my degree, they all transfer, and then I'll be my next degree, and I'll figure out what I want to do later. And if I'd been pushing myself, I would have realized freshman year, I want to be an econ major. I would have taken all my classes with Dr. Guider, who, by the way, if you ever are at the MGCCC school system, go to Jefferson Davis campus, take Dr. Guider, best teacher I've ever had, and drop knowledge on you. Instead, took some econ classes at State. Didn't have the best professors in some, but just one little thing like that, the ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever had one of those teachers that kind of like impacted my life.
I didn't realize it till I got to State, and some of my teachers were talking about things, and they couldn't answer my questions, while Dr. Guider knew so much more that he would explain things, and I literally, like, I followed that for the first 2 minutes, and the next eight, I had no idea what they were saying, because it was that much information. And then yet, if you asked him, I didn't get that, he would dumb it down, and like spoon feed it to you if need be.
Or change the way he delivered the
right.
material.
Which I feel like if you can do that, that's when you understand something. To be a good teacher, you have to understand it so well that you can explain it in any way for any child.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think spoon feeding, like you said, is definitely a really dangerous habit
for our
species as well.
Mm-hmm.
I recently listened to a podcast, London Real is the name of it, and they had futurist Jacques Fresco, who is the head of the Venus Project down in Florida. And this guy is 96 years old,
mm-hmm.
and he's like a professional. He probably wouldn't even consider himself like a professional in that sense. He's like real good with architecture and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to build the Venus Project is essentially his building of a small town where everything works super well in its environment. He suggests that we get away from a money-based economy and move towards a resource-based economy. And just his different. This guy is like super sharp. Like
mm-hmm.
96 years old, he's not slow at all.
If you're 96 and you can still speak properly and walk,
he's
doing
fluid.
Well.
He can speak better than probably any of us here. I mean, occasionally, you know, he's 96, he might tell a story mistakenly
twice. But.
Yeah, but I mean, real sharp.
If Jack talks, though, you listen.
Have you seen the Zeitgeist movies?
I've not.
He's in the second Zeitgeist.
Half.
Okay.
Of the first one.
The second Zeitgeist is a lot about our economy system and about how the Federal Reserve system, we're constantly getting more and more in debt because the bank doesn't really have the money to supply the loans and stuff because they just create money. They create a surplus, but it's all digital nowadays. So they just create
actual money. There's no limit to anything.
Right. So basically, we don't have physical money to pay back an imaginary set of money that we've established for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So Jacques Fresco talks a lot about that, and he tells this one story about how, because he's big on like changing the way we condition our learning and all this kind of stuff. And he tells this one story about how his child comes to him with a car and the car's wheels are broken off and his, you know, kid's crying. He says, Daddy, Daddy, the wheels on my car fell off. And Jock's reading a book or something like that. He puts it down and he goes, looks at it. And he goes, well, you know what? I'll buy you a baby's car. Those don't the wheels don't fall off on those, and he throws it in the garbage can. And then he goes back to his book, and the kid starts crying again. He's like, "What's wrong? I'm going to get you a baby car now." He's like, "But what if I can fix it?" So he pulls it out of the garbage can, and he was like, "All right, we'll see what you can do." Within 3 minutes, the kid puts the wheels back on the thing, and that's because he says, you know, he believes that if we spoon feed our children, mm-hmm. "Mommy, Daddy, I want this, I need this, help me with this, blah, blah, blah," and you let the parents do all the work, then it creates a slouch.
The nanny state.
Yeah, you create a slouch in your future existence where kids aren't as motivated to learn.
Another point, this goes back to it, in high school, how many kids did you see and think they're not going to graduate? If they showed up, they had a pulse, they quote-unquote tried, even if they weren't really trying, they were going to get pushed through the system and get a diploma. While having a diploma is good, it lessens the value of it for everyone else, and is there a point to it? If you give them to everybody, if you spoon-feed everyone. One of the parents at the camp who worked there, her name's Bean and Soy, they're camp names, but they have a little daughter, and she's Ellie, she's adorable, but she's a baby, so she's going to cry. Mm-hmm. And she was crying one time because she was on the ground crawling and playing with the toys, and she was just crying because she was upset, and everyone was like, "Oh, Bean, like, what do we do?" And she goes, "Nothing. Like, I don't want her to be a baby. She needs to learn to be, it's going to be okay." And she cried for about 2 more minutes and then stopped and went back to laughing and just being adorable.
Yeah.
Now, if let's see, she's not quite one. Let's call her 10 months, 8 to 10 months in that period. If an 8 to 10 month old can get over it and figure out it's going to be okay, we should be able to teach anyone older than that the same thing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong being upset or panicking, but you need to learn how to handle it yourself.
Is there a possibility that, like you said, with giving high school diplomas to just about anybody,
yes,
instead of doing that, in like you said, making the value of a diploma less for everybody else, why not just let those kids that don't want to be, like, treat it like the old days? Like, nowadays, everybody's like, "Oh, it's law. You got to go to high school.
Or
everyone's got to get
their
education."
Like, if a high school dropout makes 42% less. Well, some do, but there's also some high school dropouts that... go on to make Microsoft. They go on to found Virgin. What's the guy's name?
Richard
Sir
Branson.
Richard Branson. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go with that. But think about that. Abe Lincoln, he didn't have a degree. Yeah. Taught himself how to read.
I thought he was a lawyer.
Yeah. Taught himself.
So a law degree.
Yeah.
What's his face from Apple? Steve Jobs. He dropped out of college.
But I don't know if Abe ever finished college and got the degree, but he taught himself law. I'm not sure which one. But you get my point. You don't have to have a diploma. And nowadays, the whole idea is you need the diploma. That's what's important. No, the knowledge is important. The diploma used to be a representation of the knowledge you got to show people. Now, it's just like it's a check mark on your resume.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have this or we're not going to hire you. Yeah. And I get that. Like, you need to know people can do it, but now everyone has one, so who knows?
Yeah.
So I dropped out to prove
the system
that I am valuable without a degree.
Exactly.
And I can make the shit out of a smoothie now.
But didn't you have like 2 semesters left to go?
Yeah, probably.
Two or three.
I was a junior in college and then dropped out accidentally.
You need to consider going back for that, man. It's hard at once you've gotten to the job force, though. Huh?
Once you start, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Boom. The world needs ditch diggers, and I'm ready to dig some ditches.
But here's the thing. I talked to someone about this, but they used to be like the vocational schools, and now they're looked down upon, but yet they make $20, $30 an hour.
Yeah.
Which I don't see anything wrong with that, especially compared
to... Fix an AC or something?
Yeah, compared to what you'll make if you get a high school degree and nothing else. By the time you're 14 or 15, I think you should be able to make the decision, like, I want to go learn this skill, or I want to continue with school. But then when you continue school, and I know other countries have this, I want to say like Japan or China, and then like most of the European schools, but once you start that, there's also tougher requirements when you're in high school. If you like start slacking off, they get mad, and you don't have to, like, they won't let you stay if you keep messing around.
Mm-hmm.
Push kids and make them actually learn it.
Yeah.
But,
I don't know, there's some people that I know that are dumb as shit, and they have degrees, so.
Yeah,
a lot of
people.
That's another reason I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
It's because maybe they were one of the people that got pushed through and made
or they got a degree from somewhere. Like, there's a lot of schools where it's kind of not that hard to get it from, you know?
You give us this money, we give you this paper.
Yeah. Or it's not that hard of a subject.
Fight the power.
Right, dude. We're going to find a way. But
it's if I had to write a book on it, call it Inflation of Education, you know?
I like that name.
Yeah. Because if, I mean, like I was trying to say, if kids don't want to be there, they'd rather go out and work, well, they kind of probably know that they're going to be going into a workforce that doesn't demand as high of an education, you know, somebody who just wants a blue-collar job, somebody who just wants to work
on cars or
craft furniture or something like that, upholstery, construction, a lot of stuff. Stuff that I'm not degrading at all. It's really hard stuff. And if
skill
you're,
I don't have.
Yeah, and if you're really good at it, then you can make can make an art form out of
and
anything.
And doesn't it help to start earlier?
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of learning trigonometry and calculus.
Yeah, go get experience in the field that you want to do. And leave the higher learning to people that are going to do...
That need it for their fields.
Yeah, exactly. Because then it would maybe, I'm not sure, but maybe it would even the education field, it would bring back a stability to the job market, you know?
Yeah. Instead of everyone flooding trying to get a desk job at a financial company, we could actually have people looking for the jobs they're supposed to have or that they'd be better at or they might enjoy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But another good quote from Colin Cowherd. It was, everyone's always like, oh, like I'm a doctor or it's not rocket science. Well, like let's put those people in a different situation. Yeah. You're a doctor. You're not a psychiatrist. So like you can't diagnose this person. You're good at this and you're really good at it. And it's a hard thing. Or you're a rocket scientist. You're great at building rockets and designing things that can go to outer space, but you can't design a bridge. Mm-hmm. People don't understand like you can be smart in this area, but that doesn't make you smart in everything.
Yeah. It's like Jim Gaffigan was like, it's not rocket scientists.
It's not like talking to a girl.
Yeah. That's what the rocket scientists say.
Yeah. Everyone has their skills, and having a more diverse, I don't want to say school system, but a more diverse, I'll find the word one day, but training program, whatever you want to call it, would help them find that area.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, why, like, and also you're wasting money, like, taxpayers' money when you send them through school. I remember when we were at Nativity, it's a smaller school, people kept it closer on you and they pushed you a little harder. Like, getting bad grades was not okay there. They got mad about that. You go to seventh grade, and I'm sitting there in class, I'm 12, I won't turn 13 till May, it's August, and I'm sitting next to a 14 and a half year old who's about to turn 15 and have his permit. Because he doesn't get it, or he doesn't want to be there, and all he wants to do is work on cars. Why can't that kid, Shane, I don't know his last name, he was in my career discovery class, ironically, he wanted to work on cars. That's all he wanted to do. He told the teacher he didn't care about anything else, and he was like, I'll keep coming to school till they let me drop out. I don't care what grade I'm in, and I'm going to start working on cars. Why couldn't he, at 14 and a half, start working on cars? Or gone to a school where they were teaching that?
Could it be that the government wants us to pour more money into, you know, the education, the public school system,
by having like better jobs, like with higher education.
I think it's they want us all to reach a point of not being all like stupid, to be to productive,
be
to
functioning.
A point. Yeah,
but then that comes back to the whole like when I said they need to have classes about like you know accounting and finance and things like that, basic things like that, because everyone needs that. Start teaching that younger. Mm-hmm. I get like the higher mass, like you kind of need that, especially if you want to push further. And sometimes when you're 14, you don't know what you want to be.
Yeah.
And the school system is great because you're going to keep getting pushed through, not pushed through, but encouraged and educated. And then you can discover that.
Mm-hmm.
But when a kid knows like that, there should be the option. And this isn't a crack against McDonald's, but let's say you're going to work at McDonald's. The managers make more there than the teachers do with better benefits.
Really?
Yeah. Mr. Boucher told me that. Todd Boucher. Yeah, I called you Todd. Get over it. Anyways, but he told us that. Think about that. You're managing a McDonald's. There's skills required. You have to deal with people. But overall, is it as hard as being a teacher? No. But the demand is there and the money's there. McDonald's will pay you more to make sure their store is kept right, kept doing what it's supposed to, and have the money keep coming in.
It's also the social stigma of working at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a dude and you work at McDonald's, you're not pulling any girl over a
slain.
4. Like, that's it. You level out at a 4.
It depends on how you look. You can only look so good, though, smelling like cheeseburgers and fries.
Yeah, dude. Fries.
I got some McDonald's last night. I was disappointed, but it happens.
You ever seen those commercials where it's like McDonald's commercial and it's like, this famous person used to work at McDonald's and now they're like, hey, I got my start at McDonald's. And then they like drop a couple points in your head.
I've never seen those.
Like Brad Pitt was the mascot for like some chicken place.
Yeah. That's
he's,
okay.
He's still beautiful though. Love him. He didn't drop in my head.
It's a chicken place is different than McDonald's.
Yeah. Also, but like I said, if you're working, I don't care if you're working at McDonald's, you're digging ditches like Daniel mentioned earlier. If you're working, I got my respect for you because you're not a leech on the system. Yeah. So keep doing your boo-boo.
Yeah. Like you're saying, a kid who wants to be, you know, work on cars and knows it at age 14, maybe we could develop programs in high schools at the upper level for those kids who know that all these other subjects that we're teaching them, they're not going to use. Maybe we can set up a program, a year or two program that does, you know, they come in, they learn a few subjects.
The subjects they need to know.
Yeah. Maybe start introducing some, like, let's say you've got kids who are going to go through and get a college diploma and then go on to college. What we do, the regular math, science, all the things that we basically did in high school. Right. Well, these other kids who know that they want to do a specialty career like...
And they don't need college.
Cars and stuff like that. Well, maybe we could put them on a track where the first half of the school day, we teach them different subjects that do
basic economics, math, economics, finance.
They don't do the same subjects.
English.
We do a couple things that are a little bit different, but try to like get them their head wrapped around it like very quickly. And then the rest of the day, just let them go start working. They have to have proof that they've got a job somewhere else if they want to be part of the program.
There are co-op system, but they got something set up where they go and their vocational jobs like this, and they still teach them the basic subjects so they can be a functioning adult. That's not dependent.
Following like the stereotype of the curriculum for the automotive school or something, it'd be like reading gooderly, numbers and shit, science is for fags. These are the classes I'm taking in this semester.
Working on my BMW.
You need to make that school.
My favorite. Science is for what? That sounded very educated.
Reading gooderly was my favorite.
Mississippi.
I'm going to be super happy 20 years from now when it was like famous high school dropouts, Daniel Kavanaugh, and we have the recording that shows where you
reading
can hear.
Reading gooderly. Science is for faggots. It's like, wow, that happened.
Rarely do we have on record or video that one moment when a genius creates an idea. We have the exact moments when Daniel Kavanaugh says that this is you're a fag if you do this. And then he invented this incredible school, and now... He's got a million followers on Twitter.
And
1,000 enrollees every year.
All he's got to do is tweet like something about a t-shirt, and that t-shirt is bought out.
Worldwide. Sports. Fuck yeah.
Sports.
Sports. Books.
Breaking barriers.
These are going to be things. Shirts make millions.
Did y'all hear about the massive molasses spill that happened in Honolulu this past week?
I did.
No,
messed that up is some crazy.
How much? How many molasses?
There was, okay, so marine life took a massive hit. It was on Monday in Honolulu. It was 233,000 gallons of molasses that spilled into the harbor.
Was it like one of the? Was it like a ship that exploded? Or?
I was still trying to. I re-researched it today. It was like a cargo. They were transporting one thing into like a cargo holding area, and it. I guess it just spilled in transit. And just pour it out in the
molasses.
M-O-L-S-S-E-S.
I just said reading gooderly, so don't. I can't remember the city, but it's somewhere in America where they had this molasses factory, and they had the huge silo of molasses, and it got too hot, and it exploded, and like 12 people died. It was like 100 years ago or something, and they still say on a hot day you can smell the molasses. Like,
wow.
So, I mean, it's kind of like that, except this got in the water, huh?
Yeah, and they're saying it's going to take a really long time because unlike oil, molasses just sinks straight to the bottom.
I got you.
Oil. Yeah, go ahead.
Got the knowledge for Madsen Incorporated. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but shipping company that's built 233,000 gallons of molasses into the Honolulu Harbor earlier this month, and they have pledged to pay all the costs stemming from the disaster.
Yeah, they said they're going to take care of it. They said they're not going to let this happen again. They don't want taxpayers to have to deal with it. But the molasses sinks to the bottom, whereas oil, you know, you can scoop it up off the top.
Yeah.
Well, molasses, it sinks to the bottom because it
just gets everything as it's going down.
It's a very concentrated sugary substance. So, and somehow it robs the lower depths of oxygen, so the fish and all the stuff that are living down there just suffocate. So
25,000 fish, by the way. Yep. That's insane. And that's just what they can, like, tell or estimate. God only knows how many is.
And who knows if... things will keep dying as a result of the molasses being down there.
Or how many of like a certain type of fish get killed and then their predators are going to start.
They sent a diver, sent a diver down, one of the news teams there, and he shot video and he just said the floor was covered with, you know, crabs and fish and eels. And the people, the health department, even though molasses isn't harmful to people, they're advising everyone stay out of the water because obviously predators will be around because, I mean, there's so many dead fish and harmful bacteria sharks. That can result in all
diabetic
that kind of stuff.
Sharks.
Barracudas. Yeah. Blood
that's just foxes. Crazy. I mean, molasses, you hear oil and stuff spilling all the time, but molasses.
Another type of oil.
I didn't think a bunch of molasses and water would kill everything.
Yeah, turns out it does. With a vengeance.
It's weird how sensitive ecosystems can be, especially with like human-made stuff or just humans intervening. Like, there's some forest fires this summer in the mountains, and I didn't know, but they said we can't just drop the stuff that puts out the fire, not the water, but like the foam, whatever, because once they did that, that part of the forest would not grow like it was supposed to. It's all about preserving the wildlife, so they had to just make a perimeter like miles and miles away and just burn it, and then burn it to try to kill the fire. Like, cutting your losses, but...
Control burn.
Yeah. And just saving the wildlife. And then when they went to some areas of the woods, they then would have to clean themselves off for hours and their suits, because they didn't want to take seeds from this area and mix it with these seeds and then, like, mess up the ecosystem. It was really cool.
It's crazy how much people care about ecosystems now, and opposed to, like, 50 years ago, they just didn't.
And there's just smoke just everywhere.
Did whatever.
Also, shout out to the firefighters that were working like that. They were grinding.
Right. Yeah. A lot of shout outs.
Yeah, dude. That's what I do. No grind, no shine.
Yeah, well, I think people are more invested in the environment now because we're so interconnected with the... We can see the results of things happening very quickly.
And you can spread the knowledge quicker as opposed to 50 years ago when something bad would happen in Massachusetts.
Company would cover it up. You wouldn't hear about it.
Yeah, only people up there knew about it. And if they talked about it, they got their teeth broken. So.
Yeah.
Now all it takes is one tweet and things get offhand.
It was kind of like back in, you know, like when Kennedy was killed. I've seen so many documentaries and people testifying saying that, you know, people that were there at the time who get like FBI agents, or no, CIA agents, because CIA is the ones who probably did them in.
The sneaky ones.
Yeah, they pulled them in and they're like, all right, well, what did you see? Well, I saw this guy, he was up there, and it looked like he had a gun, and I heard a gunshot, and I look, and I saw smoke right next to this guy that I saw earlier. You didn't see that. Come on. Think about it. You know you didn't see that, you know? And there's all these stories of them getting interrogated, and the CIA or whoever else is interrogating them.
The division we don't even know about.
Yeah, exactly.
It's SHIELD.
You know, and then it was just recently that I think the Discovery Channel started releasing all this stuff because when that event happened, they took a lot of files and they sealed it away and, you know, and it was just not public knowledge. This is dangerous. We can't, you know, meanwhile, why are we really being kept from that knowledge, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I understand it could have worldly implications for our political systems if things went wrong, but...
It's all about controlling the situation.
Exactly. Are those implications... negative for the government itself, for what they're trying to keep together, or would it be bad for everybody? You know, that's the question. You know, are they hiding this material because it's dangerous for, it would be dangerous for everybody if another country that's hostile towards us found out, or is it just the government at the time did something that they didn't want anybody else to know about because they wanted to put somebody else in power to, you know, try to
change
stop
something.
All the stuff that JFK was trying to do.
All the changes.
Exactly. Rob Lowe is going to play... Y'all ever heard of him? Do y'all know who that is? He's an actor, Rob Lowe. He's playing JFK in a TV movie called Killing Kennedy that's going to be set to air on Nat Geo next month. No. What are we in? Are we in September? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in November. Mid-November that they're going to air it.
Like a month and a half. Two months.
Yeah. So... Kennedy's one of those things that people just get eaten up with those conspiracy theory things. It's really interesting, though. I mean, there's a lot of fascinating angles you could look at it. I watched the movie with Kevin Costner, JFK.
Oh, yeah. It's about the court.
Yeah. It was a couple years ago that I watched it, and it was a long movie.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to recall the info from it, but...
Was it good? Worth watching?
Yeah, oh yeah, it was good. Okay. It was good. But just be strapped in, be prepared for the long
haul. Get
your
popcorn ready.
If it's good, I can watch a long movie. I watched that movie, Gandhi. Good movie. It's like 3 hours.
I watched Lord of the Rings.
Ben Kingsley solid. Plays Gandhi.
Nice.
Yeah, I watched Lord of the Rings too.
When I watch Lord of the Rings, I skip to the fight scenes. So naturally, I don't watch the first one.
So it was like 40 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how it should be.
Yeah. Basically, the first and the second Lord of the Rings are the only ones I know about. The first one doesn't have...
The first one's just like, imagine like a group of friends meeting up and like, let's go for a long, creepy walk.
I watched the first two, and then I just didn't watch the third one because I was like, eh, fuck it. Fuck that.
You didn't watch the third one?
And then like a year ago, I rewatched them all.
Okay.
I had a bunch of people freak out and be like, the third one's the best. You need to watch it.
Yeah.
And then I kind of resented them for telling me that, so I didn't watch it.
J.K. Rowling's actually making her debut as a screenwriter. Creative Harry Potter series will be making her first movie series in partnership with Warner Brothers. And it's based on the Hogwarts textbook, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And it's supposed to be set in the world of wizards and witches, but Rowling says it is neither a prequel or a sequel to Harry Potter.
So it's about all these magical creatures. Maybe mm-hmm. it's about the guy who wrote the book and how he researched it,
mm-hmm.
You know, and went out in the field.
Yep.
I don't know. That's a guess.
Yeah, I think that's actually pretty much along the lines of exactly what it's shaping up to be there.
Wow. It's like I'm J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. Had you gotten on it a couple months prior, you could have had something going. Mm. Not really. She would have sued you.
The other night I couldn't sleep and I read the entirety of the Duke Nukem saga. I read what it was all about.
Let me just stop you there. No, I'm kidding.
So what I'm saying is I need to be more productive with my time.
So what I'm saying is I wish I was never born.
Wasn't that good? Doesn't hold up.
You're planning, Josh, to go to Australia soon, aren't you?
Right. 2 weeks from today. Yeah. 2 weeks from this moment, I will be in Dallas with about 3 more hours till I head to LA, and then from LA to Fiji, Fiji to Sydney.
So you get to go to Fiji.
Yeah, it's like a 5-hour layover, so I won't get to do much.
What are you going to do in Fiji for 5 hours?
Probably like...
What's there? Where's that?
No, you're not going to leave the airport, probably.
Yeah, no.
5 hours, like, too terrified.
Think they got McDonald's in Fiji?
McDonald's is everywhere, bro. What I'll probably do is
eat. What kind of money do they take?
In Fiji, everyone takes U.S. dollars.
You think so?
They do. Googled it.
Okay, good.
Especially in the airport. And if nothing else, if they won't take my actual physical money, everyone will take my debit card.
Really? Yeah. Debit cards are international, too?
Yeah, when I talked to my friends at the girl who already went and worked as an au pair in Australia, she said, you can use your American debit card. I'm going to open my own bank account, get money, like Australian dollars. And
what are those called, by the way?
It's literally Australian dollar.
Nope. Is that it?
Yeah.
No.
You want to Google it?
Sorry, Daniel.
No, they're not called Australian dollars, are they?
Hold on, we'll ask Google. It's either that or the
coin. What is Australian currency called? Wait, that was founded by England. Why would they... They'd be like pounds, right? Why would they call them Australian dollars?
How about you just wait and Google will tell us.
Dead air sucks.
Oh, what? Weird. The Australian currency is Australian dollars.
That's bullshit.
Look.
I have a huge problem with that.
You're taking this very personal.
Look.
Yeah.
Look, they were founded.
Those are ours. Hey, dollars are ours.
Hey, you want to hear a fun story? Great England founded the 13 colonies. And we were like, lick my nutsack, America. We made dollars. So Australia was like, we're founded by Great Britain and we don't like them either. Australian dollars.
No.
People helping people, bro. Democracy.
I think I'm more against this than like anything I've ever encountered in my life.
Don't you dare say it. Nazis are worse. Nazis and communism.
I didn't say anything about Nazis.
You said more than anything.
I've never encouraged a Nazi. I am now encouraging.
Oh, that you mean encouraged.
Encountered? Encountered, sorry.
Encountered.
Encountered.
Okay. Well, anyways, back to the whole point. Mm-hmm. They'll take my debit card. I'll put my own bank account, obviously, so I can get
Australian dollars equal American dollars? Do they call them American dollars here?
Daniel's not going to allow you to finish your story. He's like, no, this is done.
We're not talking about this evil.
We're going to beat this dead horse.
I'm done with that. I love beating things. It's about, someone said it was 85 cents to the dollar, but it was an American, and I don't think he knew what he was doing.
Which dollar are we talking about? See how this is confusing? Doesn't work.
Listen. Obviously, ours is more. So it'd be 85 cents of ours is worth an Australian dollar. If I give them a dollar, they're going to give me... If I give them a dollar, they're going to give me more than a dollar in Australian.
So they're
going
to give you a $1.12?
$1.25.
$1.25?
Something like that, let's say. Hold on, let's Google it. Why am I the one Googling things?
Because I like to just go off my head. Google's up here, man, in the mind, bro.
It will be one day.
Yeah, is it? Because you were like, it's not. It's like the pound, it's not the dollar.
I said it would make more sense if it was like the pound. They just really missed the opportunity to name money. How often do you get to name money? New money.
That's true.
You know? And you're going to pick a dollar?
Yeah.
Why?
They probably just love us that much.
Peso's cooler than dollar. Australian peso.
Yeah, it sounds cool. It ain't worth shit.
Yeah, name something in peso. See how much you'll pay for it. Okay, $1 equals... See, okay, so the guy who said it was 85 cents to a dollar, I was like, nah, it's not. He was like, no, it is. And it was just one of those moments where like, I'm not going to argue with you since I date your daughter. But it was just kind of like, okay, I'm not going to argue, but I knew it was wrong because my friend, who's from New Zealand, so he might actually know something about it.
What do they have in New Zealand?
I don't know.
New Zealand dollars.
No, they better not. New Zealand, it better be like just straight up called Kiwis.
I'm going to Google that.
But anyways, it's $1 equals 1.07 Australian dollars. So $1.07.
Okay. So it's like
it's basically the same.
And some tax. Isn't a euro, it's a dollar like 12, right? One to make 1 euro, I think. So because their euro's worth more than a dollar. American dollar.
I'm sorry, what?
Right?
I don't know about the euro. Fluctuating.
I think it's like 1.11, if I had to guess.
American dollars to their dollar?
Yeah. No. Theirs is more than ours.
That's what I said.
Yeah, okay then.
Whichever one you have to give more of is the one that is less, because you need more of it to make up for it. Yeah, so I basically look at it as equal.
God damn. It's New Zealand dollar.
I'm about to say.
I feel like this is very wrong.
It's not, though.
Everything.
Think about it. It's flattering. They want to be great.
How many countries have the dollar as their dollar?
14.
You don't think maybe it just translated the dollar? Americans just call it a dollar?
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to Google... Mexico, we know what they have in Mexico. They have pesos. We're going to test Google. I don't know, man. I feel like I should name all the money from now on.
Wait, doesn't Canada have the Canadian dollar?
I think so.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Our own backyard.
Well, they're like our top hat. They don't have a choice. But if you think about it... 1 second, got a call in.
What? You're taking a phone call right
Josh
now?
Josh is taking a phone call, so we'll get right back
to him.
I'll
stop
in a
Googling
minute.
So I can talk.
Oh, please do. I'm feeling very lonely over here. There was a...
Sorry, as my agent, but yeah.
Australia should name their currency koalas.
You tell your agent love them?
Yeah, dude.
Okay. That's good. That's
people
good.
Help
That's
people,
good business,
dude.
Bond.
You get what you give. I give love, I get love.
Yeah.
I love love.
I like it. Love, that should be our currency.
Mm-hmm.
From now on.
We're changing it from the dollar to love.
Coastal noise, love is our currency.
And
see
money.
The light.
Gold. Cocaine. Also accepted currencies.
Negative. That would be really hard to negotiate the e-commerce section of the Coastal Noise page trying to pay for t-shirts in cocaine.
Four love dollars or four loves equal... I don't know. I don't know.
Four loves.
A kilo of cocaine. That seems like a lot of cocaine.
So wait a minute, you're using love to pay for cocaine to pay for the t-shirts or whatever merch?
Yeah, we gotta find a drug dealer that'll accept our e-love because it's electronic currency.
So basically you're saying we gotta find a lonely drug dealer. It shouldn't be hard.
Mm-hmm. Could do it.
Uh-huh. And then he'll have to accept our love and acknowledgement of him.
He could trade that love in for something else physical.
Then you're assuming that he is going to find someone who's going to accept the currency of love.
The person who paid us in love will then accept. We've transferred the debt to this drug dealer.
Dude, people loving people is a beautiful thing.
He's gonna go to their house and get their love in a physical way.
This is getting to be a complex circle for multiple reasons. Maybe Josh can comment on this because he's an econ major. But just going off my own very limited knowledge. So we've got a person who wants to purchase something with love,
right,
which we take
and give to a drug dealer.
And why do we give it to the drug dealer?
Because now we have cocaine.
Okay.
Or drugs, just drugs.
Okay.
They don't have to be specific drugs.
So we take the love, we exchange that love to a drug dealer for drugs.
Then the drug dealer goes to the person's house who gave us said love, knocks on their door, and says it's time to pay up.
But, that's a tricky system, but you could pitch it to Australia and maybe they can...
I'll bring it up. I'm sure I'll meet the president sometime.
Yeah?
I'm kind of a big deal. So.
We already changed their currency to koalas.
Now, are you living in a... what's the city that you're...
I'll be residing in Melbourne. It's spelled Melbourne. And most people want to pronounce it Melbourne. And then they'll tell you Melbourne. But with their accent and the way they speak, it's Melbourne. That's how they say it. So,
how far away are you from New Zealand?
I mean, my friend said you can get a flight for $100. It's about 3 to 4 hours.
Nice.
So it's not bad.
Seems like a cheap ticket.
Yeah, it's and nice. Then I'll probably be flying from Sydney to Melbourne, and I'm assuming it'll be $100-$200. Mm. It'll be the day of, so probably a little more, but we'll see what we can do. Rent wasn't that bad. We're looking for a house for 5 people. It was like $700 a week, so it was going to be like $600, $650 per month per person.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was they call it bonds, and it's your deposit. It's like 3 Gs.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you'd have to pay $1,200 for the first month because you'd have to pay for the rent and then your deposit.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get that figured out. We got friends letting us come with them and crash if we need to till we make money, but I'll just keep grinding.
There you go.
There's like 7 countries that use dollars. Anyways, that's enough dollar talk. I'm gonna let it go.
All right, fellas. Daniel, do you need to scoot out soon? Should we wrap it up? It's 5:15.
Yeah. I gotta be somewhere at 6.
Okay. So. We will close it out then. All right, fellas. That's all for now.
Glad I could finally make an appearance.
Yeah, dude. How long are you going to be in Australia again?
Until end of June. So basically, I'll be back, let's just say June 25th at the latest.
But yeah.
When I get back, I'll be doing wedding stuff. Not for myself, but be involved in that. So.
You thinking you might travel after that a little more?
Not for a little bit. I'll probably try to come back, and unless something happens between now and then, probably mm-hmm. try to pick a city and thrive in it, get some things going.
Gotcha.
Make some moves.
Are you planning on making any visits from Australia back here and
like
halfway point or something like that?
Well, I'm obviously going to visit New Zealand while I'm there, maybe like on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm done working, it's time to come back. We're going to plan it out, think about 1 or 2 weeks. But see Australia, see New Zealand, and if I can swing it, I'm stopping by Brazil for the World Cup.
Nice.
And then I want to fly into New York when I come back to America. See my boy Alan Longino, great. He's deep in the art game up there, apparently. Check his Instagram. Check his Facebook. He'll drop some knowledge on you. Crash with him. Let him show us around. And then we'll probably fly down for the wedding. That's the game plan.
Nice.
So.
Well, cool, man. Well, I hope you enjoy it, and I can't wait to have you back on once you get done with your Australia travels.
Me either.
So we can figure out what they're going to do about their dollar system.
Yeah, dude, we got to get the quality going. If not, we're going to make our own country, because apparently it's not hard.
It even sounds kind of similar. Dollar, koala, dollar. It's a easy. It'll happen eventually.
Everyone wants a cute currency.
Reading goodly. Yeah.
Everyone wants a cute currency, so they should be all over it.
It's gooderly, not goodly.
Goodly. I'm sorry, I'm not educated.
Gooderly. You'll learn about this at the Daniel Institutes of Knowledge and Technology.
Of reading and other good things. It should be at least 2 times the size. This is the longest goodbye ever, by the way. It's what I do.
Yeah, it happens.
Happens on the regular. All right, CoastalNoise.com. Go there. Get the podcast. Do everything you want to do. Follow Twitter, Facebook, whatever. You're more than welcome if you want people to follow along with your adventures. I don't know if you post, if you're going to post a...
I'll think of something. I may just write a journal, and if it gets deep or more of that sense, I'll publish it. We'll see.
That'd
people
be cool.
might want to.
You can make a blog or something.
Yeah,
Instagram.
For sure. Yeah, through Instagram and Twitter, I'll be taking pictures, talking about things. Just dropping some knowledge I learned from there. Ghost of Noise probably has some t-shirts and stickers soon. So be in touch with Stefan and Daniel, and they'll get them to you. See the light. Let's do this, people.
Hey, Coastal Noise Podcast. Love is our currency. Goodbye.